Hello, everybody. Hello, and welcome to The Week in Men's Rights with, currently, it's just Prim Reaper and myself, the Doge in Charge. We will be getting, hopefully later on, I did plan this out with them, but you know how British women are. Elizabeth Hobson and Natty will be joining us. Natty's having some trouble with her children, and I believe Elizabeth's probably, because they all got kids and, you know, mothers. So they'll be joining us later on. But mothers-to-be, apparently, can still show up. So, Prim, how are you doing?
Doing well, other than the fact that we have to talk about this crap, but you know,
yeah, exactly.
We've got lots to say.
Yeah, this is a. I read through it again today. I have words, but currently I'm too upset at what's written here. But we'll get into it. So, what are we talking about this week? We're going to be looking at and discussing a article that was put out by the American Psychological Association that has supposedly the topic is they have finally addressed guidelines and issued guidelines for that would involve psychological practices with men and boys. And so basically the article is up here. It's entitled APA, American Psychological Association, issues first ever guidelines for practice with men and boys. And boy, oh boy, is this when people say they're skeptical of psychologists and they don't like shrinks. And it's funny because one of the men are often the kind of people that don't trust shrinks. Like if you look, it's sort of like an old narrative stereotype where, you know, like if you're watching like a sitcom like The Honeymooners or All in the Family, where the wife is like, oh, you know, maybe you should see a therapist. Right. And he's like, I don't like shrinks because, you know, this, that and the other. We want to like push back against those stereotypes. We would like to believe that being a clinical psychologist is like a worthwhile career that actually has value. But this kind of shit is like what ruins that credibility. And this is being put out by the American Psychological Association. I fear, we haven't even read through this yet, but I fear that this, let's say this field is just like corrupt as shit. That's what it looks like to me. But we can get into that. I don't want to, because Prim, you're here because you're actually someone who has an interest in this industry, right? And you've always had this interest. Is it like this something that you've been interested in for a while? Yeah.
Since high school, basically. And I mean, this like okay, I just started my ethics class in psychology.
Oh boy.
And there's a section in the code of ethics that talks about personal behavior becoming a concern of the discipline only if it is of such nature that it undermines public trust in the discipline as a whole. So it's like, is that not exactly what this article is doing? Because I think that's what it's doing. I don't know about anybody else.
Yeah. So I guess before we get into the article itself, how much do you know by any chance how official or how let's say how much sway or influence this article will have on the psychological, community, the psychology community or the psychology industry as a whole. Do you think that they're going to reference this as like the baseline, or do you think that we're sort of like looking at a smaller part of a bigger picture and maybe this isn't that much to worry about, you know, because there is criticizing what's written in it. And then there's like genuinely being concerned that this is going to impact the way that we practice psychology with men and boys.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I mean, I'm not sure yet. I mean, obviously I haven't actually seen too much discussion within the psychological community of this yet. Most of what I've seen has been kind of criticisms of it, but you know, knowing the kinds of readings that are coming up in my own education and things of that nature, I think that there is a strong potential that this could really catch on, which is kind of frightening. I think that unless a lot of people start standing up against this and speaking out about all of the problems that are inherent in this document, then, you know, we might be in for a bit of a bumpy ride for a while.
Yeah. So my, I guess my, the only thing, cause I'd be concerned, I'm concerned about this. And the main reason is because I don't know if there is a counter study or a counter sort of article that is coming from someone within the psychology community that has enough clout, enough, respect around him or her to sort of debunk this shit. So I would, that's the thing that I'd be concerned with. Although I heard Barbara Kay made a response to this that I just saw, but I haven't had a chance to put it up. Maybe if we have time, we can do that later. So I want to tell you guys how we're going to do this, and then we're going to get into it. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through the article with Prim, and if, I'm hoping that we'll see them, but if Elizabeth and Natty come on, they can also comment. We're going to do this for about an hour, and then we're going to go into the after show to continue the conversation. So if you want to be a part of the whole conversation, you have to be a badger. You have to go to feedthebadger.com and make a monthly donation. There's all kinds of levels. It's not very expensive, and you can be, you'll get into the Discord. You'll be able to join us on the after shows. You can talk to us in the after shows, or you can just watch them if you can't be a part of it. If you're at work or you're shy, it's okay. But yeah, this is how that's done. So please consider doing that. We still do Patreon, but we're going to have to move away from it. It doesn't look viable. So we are trying to build our own model for funding, and we want you guys to support that, because the less we are dependent on entities that don't really want us there, then the better we're going to do, and the more work we can do that I think you guys want to see more of, and hopefully we could spread this around to more people and get people talking about it. And I think that, you know, that is the way forward. We got to build our own market, and that's what we're doing. So go to feedthebadger.com. The info is, you can see it scrolling there at the bottom where the spinning badger head is. Just use that. So, and become a badger yourself. Okay. So APA issues first ever guidelines for practice with men and boys. I went through the article and I highlighted some stuff that I thought would give you guys a sense of the bullshit that's in this. But I guess, Prim, you have a lot of notes that you've taken as well, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's quite a few. Looks like this first section, we're totally aligned. We're talking about this.
Okay, excellent. So I'm going to go ahead and read out this first section, and we will talk about this. So at first blush, this may seem unnecessary. You know, to like issue first ever guidelines for practice with men and boys. Okay. For decades, psychology focused on men, primarily white men, to the exclusion of all others. And men still dominate professionally and politically. Okay, there's a super chat coming through. I'm gonna let it come through before we don't do those anymore unless you do $30 or more. French Honey Badger gives us $5 and says, time for the 50 states to secede from the United States of America. Okay. All right, going back to the article. Men still dominate professionally and politically. As of 2018, 95.2% of chief operating officers at Fortune 500 companies were men. According to a 2017 analysis by Fortune, in 16 of the top companies, 80% of all high-ranking executives were male. Meanwhile, the 115th Congress, which began in 2017, was 81% male. So I guess fuck men then, because
some guys are successful.
Yeah.
Like these last several points, it's like, okay, and like, how does that have any relation to anything else?
Yeah, and also, so are you telling me that a man who is the chief operating officer of a Fortune 500 company, that guy doesn't need psychological help at all? Like, fuck him? Like, if he's under tremendous stress from his job, and he has the money to afford your fucking $50 an hour psychological assistance, that's the guy who can afford it, but also fuck that guy? Like, what?
Well, the one sentence in this first paragraph that really pissed me off, for decades, psychology focused on men, particularly white men, to the exclusion of all others. No, it fucking didn't. Not unless you're talking about Freud as all psychology, and even then he still talked, at least in his own crazy way, about women. like behaviorism was a gender neutral form of psychology focused mm-hmm. largely on promotion of certain behaviors and the consequences that arose from those. You know,
let me ask you. Let me ask you a question. When psychology was starting off as a discipline, when it was like brand new, okay? And I mean, this might be proto-Freud or whatever. What was the group of people that was likely, most likely to be able to afford it and was most likely the ones to request it? Like, I think, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. That's why I'm asking. But it seems to me that if it was like the late 1800s or something, and people were just starting to talk about psychology, or maybe the early 1900s, and was a practice that was happening, and it wasn't cheap. Like, you know, we're not talking about the way things are now. Like, the middle class was not a thing back then. There was like poor people, and then there was like elites, right? And it would seem to me that people have the disposable income to be interested in pursuing a brand new kind of science in an effort to help their problems would be people who have the money to that can afford, psychologists. And I think that there was a lot of analysis of women that had a lot of free time that were probably like middle class or higher, you know. So I'm just asking. So I think the idea that it folk. Besides, they contradicted themselves right off the bat. So if they're just now issuing guidelines to practice for men and boys, then how can you say that they're just now starting to figure out how to do men and boys, and then say that it's been for men and boys since the beginning?
Well, how? Like, kidding, right? Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, and plus, like, as I was saying, like, Adler focused on a sense of inferiority and superiority and social demands on personality, and Jung focused on all of his mystical crap along with the healthy relationship to the unconscious. And we can talk for hours about how relevant a lot of that stuff is. But if you're telling me that these are all things that men experience and not women, then I'll take that theory and I'll show you where you can shove it.
Yeah.
Quite frankly.
Okay, so people are complaining that my mic is too loud, so it's fine. It's usually the dominant one. I think it has to do with the fact that I'm hosting the call. But
or maybe it's the fact that you're a male.
Yeah, it's because I'm my mansplaining is much louder than your femsplaining.
Exactly.
So, but anyways, you'll see a pattern of this. Where there is constantly bringing up this idea that because there is a group of people that in the eyes of the author here, because there's a group of people that have what is perceived to be more power, then that means that they're less deserving of services. And that has nothing to do with psychology. There's nothing ethical about that whatsoever. But for some reason, it's justified because men rule the world, so fuck those guys. Or something.
So much for challenging the stigma about mental health, right? I mean, I guess it's only for some people.
Yeah. Okay. So, I already read that first bit. French Honey Badger gives us $5 and says, service mostly used by women, catering mostly to women, was apparently only constructed for men. It's like saying cosmetics only cared about men. Yeah, that's what I think. But again, I don't know for sure. So I don't want to I'm not going to plant a flag on that one. I'm just saying, if I think about what the time period was like when psychology was new, I would guess that the people that probably got the most out of it, or a lot out of it, were women with a lot of leisure time, is my guess. Because if you're working 18-hour days, you don't have time to see a shrink. And this was like... the birth of, or like the early part of the Industrial Revolution, there was probably just, and there were still lots of people who lived in rural areas that didn't see anyone outside their small community. So I'm guessing that. So like, be that as may, if there's someone who's going to correct me on it, it's fine. Just know that I'm not super committed to that because I'm totally speculating here. So, all right. So the next thing I have highlighted, or I could just read through it, but basically it says, but something is amiss for men as well. Men commit 90% of homicides in the United States and represent 77% of homicide victims. They're the demographic group most at risk of being victimized by violent crime. They are 3.5 times more likely than women to die by suicide, and their life expectancy is 4.9 years, about 5 years, shorter than women. Boys are far more likely to be diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder than girls, and they face harsher punishments in school, especially boys of color. Not that that fucking matters, because probably the fact that they're men is more important that they than they are men of color. Just saying. I hate that they try to bring race into it as a means to sort of like, it's like they're trying to smooth out and take attention away from the real issue, is that they're men that are in trouble. It's like they're, when you look at the situations for people of color, for blacks and Hispanics, because when they say people of color, that's what they're talking about. They usually ignore Asians and Jews. But when you're looking at the situation for blacks and Hispanics and Middle Eastern people and stuff that, you know, tend to do more poorly in Western countries like the United States, right? And they're trying to talk about them. They cannot get away from the fact that those are people of color first. And they, and instead of looking at the individual situations between the genders within that group, and if you do that, you'll find that more of the problems faced by people of color that they're talking about, blacks and Hispanics, are more universal across the gender. They make more sense between men and women than they do between blacks, whites, and Hispanics. But they don't like that, because race baiting is a lot more popular than looking at the situation for men in general, without like leaving the race part out of it. They just can't do that. So
like, it gives them the whole intersectionality angle, right? It's like, yeah. Oh, well, I mean, like, obviously we're focusing on this because obviously these guys are more oppressed, so we have to bring them up as a separate group.
Yeah, exactly. And then, well, they, again, it, they get to avoid talking about the real constant, which is men. It's really annoying. So
yeah, well, because I mean, like, you can tell the way they talk through this entire thing. It's, even though they're talking about men, they still use every chance that they can get to minimize it somehow by comparing it to some other group, like men of color, women in general. Like, they make all kinds of comments, and it's terrible. So much for a statement on men and boys. They can't even keep their own thing consistent.
Mm-hmm. So let's go through this really quick. Men commit 90% of homicides. You know, I was thinking about this number. It sounds really high. And I wonder, I'm just asking, putting it out there again, I don't know for sure, but I suspect that what we defined as homicide, or the number of times that a woman got off, might be enough to offset that number. And maybe women commit homicide more often than we think. They do represent the homicide victims. I'm sure that's right. It's probably more than that. They're the demographic group most at risk of being victimized by violent crime. Well, there's some realness right there. That's true. And they are 3.5 more likely than women to die by suicide. You know, it's funny that they call it die by suicide instead of like go through with suicide. It's just interesting, because later on they mentioned that women, they say women commit suicide more often, but men die more often. And I'm like, God. Wait, but how can women commit suicide more often but not die? But doesn't that mean that they fail at that? Like
that comparison actually pissed me off. Like, the suicide rates for women have been on the rise as well, but because men complete suicide more often than women, men's suicide death rates remain the highest. Mm-hmm. Like, what the actual fuck is that with the way they phrase that, right? Like, I wasn't aware that the highest number of deaths by suicide was all of a sudden a competition now, you psychos. Like,
yeah, exactly.
What the hell, man? How twisted is that?
Why are we even looking at that? Why are we saying, well, men are winning in this department, so maybe we should like give that. How about suicide's a problem?
Yeah.
And let's talk about it, you know?
Right?
That's crazy. And yes, a lot of times the you know, if you count the times that women got men to kill for them, it offsets that homicide thing too, which is frequently. So Okay, so that was the thing I just needed to talk about. And oh, and the attention deficit hyperactivity disorder thing. So do you want to say anything about that? Boys are far more likely to be diagnosed with ADHD.
Well, I mean, it's of course they're going to be, because in schools, all of the activities are being taken out in favor of like study methods that are better suited towards girls. Like a lot of schools are canceling recess now. Like boys have no outlets to use the energy that they have. So of course they're struggling to maintain interest in schools. Like it's just, it's a very different kind of way of learning, and we're prioritizing the way girls learn over the way boys learn. So then it should really come as no surprise to anybody that when we're looking at things from a female lens, all of a sudden, oh yeah, these boys are the problem, right? Like clearly we have to medicate them and calm them down rather than wonder if maybe we should stop focusing on purely female ways of learning, and we should come up with different ways, basically.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Somebody asked me if the APA is a national or international corporation or organization. I'll look into it shortly. Another thing about the ADHD thing, well, it's been definitely a product of the feminized, let's say, feminized education system that caters to girls' needs. And boys just have to adapt to the new system, and they don't adapt very well. But there's a ton of other factors as well. So
that's true too.
I mean, that's probably one of the main ones, though. It's just the fact we just don't. It's like the people who educate kids and are put in charge of children, which are not the parents for most of their lives now. They don't know anything about boys. They don't seem to, and they're not informed about them. They're just treated like blank slates, right? And it's like it's like they don't understand that boys' brains are different and they work differently.
Oh, God, yeah.
So.
Yeah, exactly. And plus, like, there's fewer male teachers as well. Fewer people who understood what it was like to grow up as a boy. You know, it's all becoming very female-centric. And like it's brutal, and it's not fair to boys at all.
Yep. So Hoki Bukisa gives us $4.99, and he says, looks like women are the ones afraid of commitment after all. When you're talking about the suicide thing. They don't go through with it. Get on our level, women. Because apparently that's what psychologists want. They think that women are falling behind, need to catch up. Men shouldn't be winning at everything. Instead of, hey, how about we fix this problem?
Yeah, like let's try and stop all people from committing suicide. Not okay, well, this is one area in which men are still winning. It's like, oh God, just shut up.
Yeah. So the American Psychiatric Association, I should probably like tell you guys what it is. Psychiatric Association. I'm just looking here. What is it? Main professional organization of psychiatrists and trainee psychiatrists in the U.S. and the largest psychiatric organization in the world. They are mainly American, but some are international. So this will likely inform everywhere unless there is a counter to it that is basically. And here's the thing, like there might be professionals in the field and lots of them that disagree with this and will make, you know, papers or write up. Essays that will try to debunk this stuff. But you have to, there's the thing that I find that's scary. And this is why I think this is a serious problem that this exists. And it's being put out by the American Psychiatric Association and it's treated like it's useful information. Okay. Future psychologists are going to be educated through this lens, because even if people that are professionally in the field that are working as psychologists and they don't like that and they think that's bullshit, eventually those people are going to retire and the new people are going to be educated through the professors that buy into this stuff. And we've seen some of the shit that professors in colleges like and use as actual education. It would not be a surprise at all that they would use this and take it seriously. How many psychology professors do you think are feminists? How many?
Oh gosh, tons.
Yeah, like I mean, the majority.
I'm currently going Yeah, like I'm currently going through my master's of counseling right now,
Yeah.
and I can say like the amount of feminist stuff that is being pushed through in a lot of these classes, it's like even unrelated documents are now bringing up feminism as like a side note. It's like, and this is the way that feminist lens would see this, and it's like, okay, but who cares though?
Yeah,
who cares what feminists would think about it? It's like saying, and this is what Christians would think, or this is what Islam would think about this kind of theory, and it's like, okay, it's not relevant, stop bringing it up. Like, but no, it's pervasive. It's sneaking into everything that it can get into.
It's just growing like a cancer. It's cancer. Mm-hmm. It really is. And the thing is too, just to make, I'm going to drive home how sad this is. Okay. It's not just people who actually identify as feminists. It's like the average person would swallow this and say it's true, because the average person believes in a degree of feminist theory. Because it's so commonplace to think this kind of shit that even people who, if you ask them, are you a feminist, they'd say no, would actually still agree with this. Because they don't know. They just take, oh, it's coming from a place of authority. It's coming from the American Psychological Association. It must be legit. Seems legit, you know, and that's going to be the end of it. They're just going to swallow it, even if they don't identify as ideologues, even if they're not ideological. They're going to go along with it because this is going to be considered education. And there needs to be, okay, a grand outpouring of pushback from professionals in the field that strongly disagree with it. And they have to take a no bullshit approach to pushing back on this. But I don't suspect that will happen to the degree that it should, that I think will. I mean, anyway, we'll get into it. You'll see how much worse it gets. Okay. So APA's new guidelines for psychological practice with boys and men strive to recognize and address these problems in boys and men while remaining sensitive to the field's androcentric past. Remaining sensitive to the field's androcentric past. Why? 13. Well, oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, it's just they're still focusing on how this whole thing was apparently focused on men. And it's like, but it wasn't, though. Like, just because a lot of things maybe perhaps listed men first, it, oh my God, like I could go into a whole rant about that. Like, that was actually part of my first negative experience with feminism, right? Was in writing an article that was challenging the statement that men are considered the default in research, whereas women are considered the other, right? And
yeah.
It's like, you know, like that's stupid though. Like, just because men are often listed first in like a men and women sentence, like that English syntax necessitates that one must come first. Like, I'm sure when we say, you know, you're comparing apples to oranges, we're not saying that apples are the default fruit. That's the point. It's a comparison between the two of them. Doing research between men and women, we are comparing men and women. I'm sure when we said that women and children first off the Titanic, we weren't considering women to be the default in that category. Like, it's just a stupid thing to say.
Yep. Yes, yes. So I just heard back from Liz. She's not going to be able to make it. So she's having trouble with her kid. It's okay. I think you and I can totally, we can do this. I've done this with Aiden and Bunny Blackwell. I think that you, Prim and I will be fine. Okay, so where was I? Okay, this is amazing too. So 13 years in the making, they draw on more than 40 years of research showing that traditional masculinity is psychologically harmful and that socializing boys to suppress their emotions causes damage that echoes both inwardly and outwardly. 13 years drawing on 40 years of research to come up with this bullshit. Can you imagine getting paid that well to do something so half-ass? Can you imagine?
Research.
Yeah, research. 13 years. Drawing on 40 years. And what? And here's the thing, too. How is it that this was a male-dominated field that was only made for men by men, and yet they're able to find somehow 40 years of research that essentially demonizes masculinity?
Yeah, no kidding. Not to mention, it's like, is it socializing boys to suppress their emotions that does it? Or is it when people drink from glasses that say male tears on them that does it? I don't know. It's a mystery.
Yeah, exactly. we've demonized men through our education system, through the entertainment industry, through, in every area that we were able to. And now, and then we educate them as though they're not boys, as though they're girls that are dysfunctional. And now they're like committing suicide and they're, you know, they're not expressing their emotions and shit. It's got to be their fault. Men are responsible for everything that happens to them, don't you know? We have so much agency that we have agency over the shit that is actually affecting us that comes from women, that comes from outside. So, by the way, the desire or need to suppress your emotions, which I don't think there's anything wrong with, by the way, suppressing your emotions can be, you know, a good thing to do. Stoicism is not something to be frowned on. I think that just like, you know, reveling in your emotions and becoming like a 2-year-old because you don't get your way, I find that that's probably a little bit less constructive. But
oh my god, I just have the most hysterical story related to exactly that concept. Just because it's okay. So my friend was she accidentally drove into the wrong driveway and she got stuck, and then she was freaking out trying to turn around, and her fiance was just saying, you know, just calm down, you just have to back up slowly. And somebody else was coming in and trying to get in behind her, and she was struggling to get back out, and she's getting progressively more and more stressed about this, and he's like, oh, just, you know, just calm down, you can just back out slowly, it's not a big deal. And she's like, stop saying calm down, my emotions are valid. I shit you not.
I've had that happen to me many times. Like, if you say I've said calm down to a feminist, and every time I do, they fucking lose their shit. They absolutely do the opposite of the thing you just asked them to do, and they act like, you know, you're trying to control them. It's like, no, I just don't want you acting like a fucking 6-year-old.
Well, but, and plus, it's like, okay, sure, your emotions are blocking you from getting this person into their driveway. How about that?
Yeah.
It's so stupid.
Oh. Okay. So, I got another super chat. Let me just make sure I didn't miss any of the other ones. No. French Honey Badger gives us $5 and says, traditional masculinity, which allowed our species to survive for 200,000 years, is the cause of all men's problems. And especially women's problems, though. Especially women's problems. That's the important thing. Based on 40 years of research. Yeah. 40 years of research. 40 years ago. What year was it, guys? What year was it? It was 1979. What changed? What changed in the psychological industry around that time? Who was making papers about psychology in the late 70s now? I wonder if the demographics shifted. I wonder. That's interesting. They didn't go back further. How come there's no Jung? How come there's, you know, I wonder. I don't know. Okay, so APA's guidelines for psychological practice with girls and women were issued in 2007. Uh-huh. I wonder what that says. And like the guidelines for men and boys, they aim to help practitioners assist their patients despite social forces that can harm mental health. Many researchers who study femininity also work on masculinity. So the people who study femininity must obviously also be the best people to talk about masculinity.
Of course, right? Like they understand. I'm sure that they're, you know, you can just click on this girls and women thing and we can pop right on over there. And I'm sure that their article is talking all about different kinds of traditional femininity and how that's a huge problem, right? Like, I'm sure that's exactly what that document looks like.
Yeah. Have you looked at it?
No, I have not. Somehow I doubt sure. It is exactly like what I just said.
No. Yeah, this is basically all about what they need. And it talks about how people are biased against women because they treat psychology like a man thing. And they don't understand women. And we need to be more caring. And we need to, it's the opposite of this other one, it's literally the opposite.
Go figure.
It's really, it's crazy. I, you know, never would have thought it. Never would have thought. It's also a lot more robust and involved. And it's about 12 years older. It's almost like we were trying to do something for them before we even thought, oh, you know what? Maybe we should deal with this man thing. Personally, I don't know. Would we need, should psychology be gendered? That and that's a serious question. I genuinely wonder about that. I mean, I'm inclined to say, yeah, sure, because I think men and women are different. But I don't know. What do you think, Prim? You're the expert.
Well, I'm working on becoming the expert, but I mean, like certain aspects of psychology, definitely. But I mean, in terms of, you know, we're working through a lot of the issues, there can be gender neutral concepts. But I mean, I think that as long as we're just not trying to treat men and women like they are exactly the same in every way, or pretending like, you know, everything is a social construct and therefore nothing is valid somehow. I mean, I don't know. I'll get more into that later, but okay. Yeah, like I think that certain aspects are definitely experienced differently by men and women. Like there are differences between men and women. I'm so sorry about that. But it's okay.
Unbelievable.
We can respect that.
Unbelievable.
And it's not a problem that needs to be rectified. I don't understand. They had this huge problem with this. It's not a problem that needs to be rectified. We can have some elements of psychology that are gender neutral, but there are differences and it's okay to respect that.
I can't believe what I'm hearing. You are such a bigot. Okay, but okay, so let's continue. Like the guidelines for men and boys, they aim to help practitioners assist their patients despite social forces that can harm mental health. Many researchers who study femininity also work on masculinity. Several contributors to the guidelines for girls and women have also contributed to the new guidelines for boys and men. Though men benefit from patriarchy, why are we hearing this in a psychology article?
Just know they had to throw it in there.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I don't know if you guys know. But if somebody says patriarchy, that should be a huge red flag. Just throwing it out there.
God.
So anyway, though men benefit from patriarchy, they are also impinged upon by patriarchy.
Wow, it's almost like patriarchy is either a really system or it doesn't exist or something like that. Neat.
Yeah, it's crazy how it works, how it's like the best thing ever for men, but also the worst thing ever for men, but it's totally about men at the same time.
Yeah.
Says Ronald F. Levant, EDD, a professor emeritus of psychology at the University of Akron and co-editor of the APA volume, The Psychology of Men and Masculinities. Levant was APA president in 2005 when the guideline drafting process began and was instrumental in securing funding and support to get the process starting. I'm sure he secured a lot of funding, too. I'm sure he did really well on that. I don't think we need to talk about patriarchy much because we have talked about it a couple of times on the show. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the program, but... but yeah, suffice to say, patriarchy's bullshit, and if somebody tries to use it, you should be very, very, very skeptical. All right, the needs of men. Prior to the second wave feminist movement in the 1960s... Okay, I just got to stop right there. Again, why are we talking about the feminist movement? This is about male psychology. Why? Yeah.
Stop bringing it up. Speaking of ADHD, these guys can't even stay focused on their topic for more than a couple of paragraphs.
Yes. Prior to the second wave feminist movement in the 1960s, all psychology was the psychology of men. Most major studies were done only on white men and boys who stood in as proxies for humans as a whole. Researchers assumed that masculinity and femininity were opposite ends of a spectrum, and healthy psychology entailed identifying strongly with the gender roles conferred by a person's biological sex.
Did they? Like, I really don't remember a lot of psychological research focused exclusively on that. A lot of it was talking a lot about the unconscious mind, or, you know, how you related to other people. Like, I really,
that I all really sounds didn't think like there was. That all sounds like man shit to me. I seriously don't understand that at all. Like, what? And then on top of that, they try again. They pull this bullshit where they say only on white men and boys. So any black people watching, you should be mad. You should be mad because for some reason, psychology that was conducted on white men doesn't work for you. It doesn't apply to you because your brains are different. What is this? What is this?
Well, not to mention they contradict themselves in one paragraph. Like, all psychology was the psychology of men, and yet researchers said that masculinity and femininity were opposite sides of a spectrum, and that we should all align with our gender roles. It's like, either you're talking about only men or you're talking about both. Like, what's the deal here?
Yeah, I guess the argument they're trying to make is that, and I think this is a bullshit argument, trust me, because I'm fairly certain that there was a lot of studies done on women. A lot women probably saw shrinks more than men. I'm just gonna put it out there. I bet they did, because they do now. And so why wouldn't they then? Men. The thing is that the toxic masculinity argument tries to make the case that men are less likely to seek help. Okay, and they're also less likely to go into therapy, and they're also less likely to see psychologists. So if they're less likely to do those things, how in the fuck is it possible that we built psychology around men? How?
Exactly, right? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
No, it makes no sense. It's absolute bullshit. But the thing I was going to say is that what they probably were thinking is that they only studied men. And they presumed, this is why they presumed, my Spanish accent came out. They presumed, that whatever their results were for studies done on men, the opposite of that must be true for women. That's what they're concluding, although that sounds retarded. Like, there's no way that they're that stupid back then. There was no way. So, moving on. But just as the old psychology left out women and people of color and conformed to gender role stereotypes, it also failed to take men's gendered experiences into account. Once psychologists began studying the experiences of women through a gender lens, it became increasingly clear that the study of men needed the same gender-aware approach, says Levant. The main thrust of the subsequent research is that traditional masculinity, by the way, traditional masculinity is just masculinity. It's not even really just masculinity. A lot of these traits that they talk about, women are capable of them too. I know it's crazy, but women can do this. It's just that it's more common in men. Marked by stoicism, competitiveness, dominance, and aggression is, on the whole, harmful. Men socialized in this way are less likely to engage in healthy behaviors. Okay?
Yeah.
So, go ahead. You want to say something, Prim, to that?
Well, I mean, it's just like they talk about these traditional masculinity things, and then they talk about them like they're all bad, like stoicism and dominance and competitiveness, like these preclude healthy behaviors. Like, you know, you can have healthy competition. In fact, I would say healthy competition has led to a lot of fantastic advances as a species. Like, you know, it can be a very, very positive thing, but they keep talking about these things as though they are solely negative. Like, maybe if my friend who was screeching about the validity of her feelings in the driveway had been a little bit more stoic about her experience, maybe she would have been able to block the driveway for a less amount of time. Right.
I know. It's crazy. It's like, they're treating acting like a mature adult as though it's toxic. It's not just a masculine thing. It's a toxic masculine thing. What kind of world do they want to live in, where we just hoot like chimps and throw shit at each other whenever something doesn't go our way, or just because we feel like it at the moment? Like, it's because of stoicism, competitiveness, dominance, and aggression that we are living in the most comfortable time in the history of our species. It's because of that we live in this world right now, where I can talk to a person in Canada through the internet at a group of people from all over the world that are connecting through this incredible device, through all these incredible things that we've made. It's because of this that we're here. And yet that's the problem. I guess we should just stay in the trees and just like, you know, peel each other's faces off so we can protect our little tribe like chimpanzees do or bonobos or whatever, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, before I continue, Prim, I know that you say you took some notes. So do you want me to jump just to like the bits that you took notes on? Because I think you might have, I don't know if you might have like more to talk about, because we've already almost come to the hour. I'll go a little bit over. I know, it's crazy. I'll go a little bit over, but we can't go for too long, because I know that you can't, you know, you got to go at some point. And yeah. I have dinner cooking in the background, so.
Right. Well.
So do you want to jump to anything or?
Well, I mean, I think like one thing that I had really written down some notes about here was that it's like, you know, they talk about men not taking proper self-care attitudes and things like that because of these toxic masculine behaviors. And it's like, you know, well, maybe you're right. Maybe if we didn't consider men valuable only in so much as they could sacrifice themselves for the good of their communities, then maybe they might take more reasonable attitudes towards self-care, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, just maybe.
Yeah. And,
like,
if we had some compassion, we might be able to help, you know, suicidal men, self-destructive men. And if we tried to look at it in terms of like trying to help them as opposed to trying to prevent them from hurting women, because that's the thing about the toxic masculinity narrative. Okay. So of all the feminist theories that are out there, of all the feminist lies and all the bullshit and all the social justice warrior shit out there, the thing that makes me the most upset, the thing that always grind my gears the most, was the toxic masculinity narrative, because it attacks men for being men at their core. It attacks masculinity itself. And not only is it attacking the masculine in men, but it attacks the masculine in women. So it basically says women shouldn't act like adults. They should remain as children, as just babies that just, you know, and they should not also embrace their feminine side either. They should remain some kind of political, lesbian, quasi-female, gender non-binary creature, and men should just either become women or just die. Just like do one or the other, or serve us, but make sure that you don't look us in the eye, don't touch us, don't talk to us without asking first, or whatever, right? So I've always hated it for that reason. And for a while, I only saw this toxic masculinity conversation happening in documentaries, on, you know, television, in parts of academia as well. Obviously, it was a big thing. And that was why it bugged me. And even nice feminists like Liana Kay believe in the toxic masculinity narrative. And they don't think it's harmful. And they think that it's actually a good way forward. And it really pisses me off, because it's the reason why we're here. Okay? It's the reason that we're here. And what worries me about this particular study is this is an official, well, it seems to me anyway, it's an official list of guidelines that's going to go out to the entire psychological community as the new standard for treating men. And it's built on the idea that toxic masculinity is, it's not that toxic masculinity is bad for men. Let me get this clear. Their idea that the reason why toxic masculinity is a problem, it's not because it's harmful to men. It's because it's harmful to women in their minds. They fear toxic men because they fear that toxic men could harm women, which means it's not about men. They don't give a shit about men. They're doing this to protect women. And ultimately, they don't give a shit about women either. They just think that that's the right way forward. So it's the worst thing. It's the worst thing. And when I saw this, I gotta tell you, I can't stand this narrative. This just really, really pisses me off. And then to bring intersectionality into it, like that helps. I got some stuff on that, but I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh gosh. Don't be sorry. Like we're basically touching on all the things that I wrote notes on.
Oh yeah. Great.
But I mean, I think one of the things too that I just want to bring up before we switch over is just I don't understand the focus on the socially constructed nature of things these days. Mm-hmm. Like It's so awful to envision that certain traits might be more likely to be inborn over one sex and in one sex over the other. Like, think about it for a second. There are obvious biological differences that happen in utero to boys and girls to even cause them to develop differently in the first place. I'm just going to go out on a geeky tangent here for a minute because
this stuff
was really, really interesting in my biopsych classes. But early embryos have the structures that can transform into either male or female reproductive systems right off the bat, called the Wolfian ducts, or the primitive male structure, and the Mullerian ducts, or the primitive female structures. And I'll spare all the very specific biological terms, but to simplify it down, if the chromosomes for the fetus are XY, the levels of testosterone will increase, which will promote development of the Wolfian ducts and degeneration of the Mullerian ducts. And the opposite will happen if the chromosomes are XX. No testosterone will be produced, and then the ducts will develop differently. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I was always pretty sure that testosterone had some serious effects on the human body. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe we should be intersectional and ask trans men about how different it makes them feel. Like, you're telling me with all of these completely opposite changes in the reproductive process this early on, there will be no discernible biological differences between boys and girls. It's all going to be socially constructed. Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Well, I think they need it to be socially constructed because it ultimately means that they have control over how humans develop. Because like I honestly believe this, okay? If you work in the fields of education, if you work in any field that has, that you believe has influence over people, like in entertainment, like in the media, like in journalism, like in, you know, again, like I said, academia, in politics, then you will believe that you can shape people, like that they're all just like, you know, little globs of clay that you can mold however you like. So if you believe that everything is socially constructed, then that means you can just shape people how you want. And the thing is, it's not that people are absolutely immune to social influence. It's that when you try to force that on people, their programming, their biological programming, tries to resist. And if you like work, if you push hard enough, you can actually do damage because you're bending things the way they're not supposed to be. You're basically pushing things in ways that it shouldn't be. And that's how you get lactatia. That's how you get, you know, like underage, very young drag queens. That's how you get people going on hormones, hormone blockers or hormones to change gender or become gender neutral. That's how you get women who bind their chest. You know, you've heard about this chest binding thing. I knew girls when I went to art school, when I went to college, that did that. And I was like, why? And they were like, well, because I feel like I'm androgynous today. And they thought of it as sort of like, I'm just feeling this way today. And they thought they can do that. And it actually turns out that binding does damage. It's like, you know, does a corset do damage if you like tighten it up too much? Yeah. Well, why wouldn't chest binding do damage too? And it does. And it's harmful. But they don't. It's like that. This is what happens when you push people against their nature enough, and you tell them either through shame or through encouragement that to do that is natural, that they should, then they follow through on it, and it's not really, they don't know what they really want. And again, you have people that are going into education at very, very early ages, earlier and earlier. Well, how do you get that? Well, you have single mothers, for one. There's no dad around because no fault divorce, because we live in a world where women are told that they can do everything on their own. And so they say, well, I'll just raise my kids by myself. And then they send those kids to daycare. And then from the moment they get in there, they start getting a feminized education from the moment they get to daycare. And that doesn't include every other place that it comes at them from. And it ends up being very destructive. And so that's, yeah. I think that's why this is what we have now, you know?
Yeah.
And absolutely. They believe that, yeah, and they believe that biology don't real, because if it did, then it would push back against their desire to control how people turn out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, like it kind of boils down to like, if you really have to force this in these little boys and girls, if you really have to force them to be blank slates and be gender neutral by dressing your boys in dresses or only buying, I don't know, Transformers for your little girls, then is it really such a good thing to try and do? Like, why is that somehow better than just allowing that there might be some differences and not differences between every boy and girl, of course, but the majority of the time there is some difference. And why is that not just okay to accept that?
Yeah. They just don't like the idea that people have free will, basically. So, okay, so let's see. And in 2007, researchers led by James Malik, PhD of Boston College, found that the more men conformed to masculine norms, the more likely they were to consider as normal risky health behaviors such as heavy drinking, using tobacco, and avoiding vegetables. And to engage in these risky behaviors themselves. Oh my God, that guy is so extreme. Why? Because he put broccoli on my plate. I don't know if that guy's going to make it to 30 acting like that.
Oh my God.
I'll pass on a salad, bruh. Oh my God, dude, that's toxic masculinity. Just give me a steak. I want it bloody as fuck. Oh my God.
That's the
really
most ridiculous
pass thing. Like they're heavy drinking. Cause guys, girls don't drink and they don't smoke. That's something that men do. That's a masculine thing. If you ever see a girl drink or smoke, it's because somebody pressured her into it. Because girls are just they're just, you know, these like dolls that people just make them do things like Barbie. They just don't they don't make choices. So
yeah, like when I used to like to drink wine every Friday before I got pregnant, obviously, that was clearly my husband forcing me to do that.
Yeah,
I have no free will.
No, you don't have free will. I mean, I don't know why you haven't gone to the police yet, because you're like about to give birth to a baby. And I'm sure that had nothing to do with you at all. You know,
it was pure rape, I guess.
It was absolute rape. And it will be when, oh no, the baby's a girl, right? No, she can't rape. If you were having a boy though, you should just call the cops on him as he's like coming out of the womb. Xerox gives us $5 and says, it would be a very sinister idea if child labor laws were about leaving children in the care of women rather than them being exposed to men working. Yeah. Thank you for the donation, sir. So this masculine reluctance towards self-care extends to psychological health. Research led by Omar Youssef, PhD, found that men who bought into traditional notions of masculinity were more negative about seeking mental health services than those with more flexible gender attitudes. And yet, psychology was built for men and by men, but men don't like it. I don't understand that.
No, it's because it doesn't make any sense.
And you know what? I don't like it now. Like reading this, I can see why guys want to avoid shrinks. They're going to treat them like women that are broken. It's bullshit.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Yeah, because obviously they're broken because I don't even know. My mind is full of fuck at this point.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty fucked up.
We're not even all the way through
the
article, and like not even close, and I just can't understand it.
Yeah, we'll go for like 15 more minutes. I want to get into another section, and then we will. Well, we'll see where we are, and maybe call it there. And then I'll just do like a shorter after show. It's fine. Because of the way many men have been brought up to be self-sufficient and be able to take care of themselves, any sense that things aren't okay needs to be kept secret, Rabinowitz says. Part of what happens is men who keep things to themselves look outward and see that no one else is sharing any of the conflicts that they feel inside. That makes them feel isolated. They think they're alone. They think they're weak. They think they're not okay. They don't realize that other men are also harboring private thoughts and private emotions and private conflicts. Okay. Really quick on that, and a couple things. I mean, I'm not a psychology expert. I'm not a psychologist. I'm just a guy with an opinion. So, you know, take that for what it is. But I think that one of the things that I think we have a real problem with is that there are no places for men to go be with other men and spend time with them. Okay. We have killed male spaces. They're all but completely gone. And when I say male spaces, I mean like exclusively male spaces. All the places where men go to be men are basically having women forced into them. Now, I'm not saying that women can't be there, but if you want, the thing is, the way that guys heal, the way that guys deal with their issues and their struggles and their insecurities is when they're around other men. Or if they have a woman that is a very good listener and very compassionate. That can be the case as well. But here's the thing. This is what men need, in my opinion. The way that men express themselves is not the way women do. And ironically, despite the fact that this article makes the claim that for many, many years, men were used as the default model for how to do psychology, it seems that they're going by the default model of how women express themselves and basically say men should do more of that without knowing how men do things, which blows my mind because some of these people are men and they don't seem to know how men work. And that's what I think anyways, right?
Well, yeah. And I mean, it's also possible, too, that, you know, sure, these guys, maybe they do, for all I know, the guys involved with this project, maybe they do, like, you know, deal with their issues in a different way from the quote unquote traditional masculine way. And that's fine. Like, I have no problem with men who want to do that as long as it's their choice to do that. But to then go and say that all the ways that other men do this is wrong, it's like, okay, well, that's super helpful to these other men, obviously. Just tell them their behavior is wrong. That'll make them mentally healthy, won't it?
Yeah, exactly. And then here's one other thing, too. Where do men get the drive to compete, to dominate, to suppress their feelings, to not appear weak? Where does that come from? Is that enforced from men? Does that come from men? That comes from women.
It comes from women.
A man is trying to attract, and I'll just put this out there, and then if you want, you could disagree, comment, whatever. Most men are heterosexual, overwhelming majority. Of those men, the majority of them are driven biologically, evolutionarily, psychologically to compete for women. So they have, and women expect that from men. You know, when we did the ICMI this past year, 2018 ICMI, and I spoke to, there was a masculinities professor, and he's supposedly one of the good ones because he was critical of the far left and he was critical of feminism. He was critical of SJWs, but he still believed that masculinity itself was a problem. So he was, I would say still pretty blue-pilled guy. Okay. And I spoke to him and he was talking about a study that showed it was like a longitudinal thing that showed that over time, men are becoming, in his mind, less homophobic because they're becoming less masculine. And he was explaining how, right? For some reason, he correlated masculinity with homophobia, but that's whatever. He is a gay man that had, you know, dealt with some trauma when he was young. And I think that he carried that with him. And I'm saying that not as a psychologist, but as somebody who clearly sees that there's like kind of an agenda attached. But that's not what I'm trying to talk about here. Here's the thing. I asked him, I said, you know, in your study, you keep talking about how men feel about masculinity over the years. But what did women think about this study? What did women think? And he said, you know what? It's actually interesting that you asked me that question, because it turned out that women were the people who I got the most pushback on with regards to traditional masculinity. And I was like, of course they do, because women want masculine men. And men know that about women, right? And I mean, I'm speaking in generalities here, not all women, blah, blah, blah. But women want men that are going to be strong, masculine men that make them feel safe. It's going to give them a safe place so that they can, you know, raise their children, etc. We know this. This is the truth. So any toxic masculinity that these people criticize, the thing that they always leave out, always, is the fact that most of it is informed not by other men, but by women. just by existing. It's not that there are women saying you need to act this way. It's just by existing. When women say, you ask a woman, what does she want in a man? Most of them are going to give you the same answer. And it's all stuff that requires men to compete, to dominate, to suppress emotions, and to just like get on with it and not whine, because women don't find that attractive. Look at male feminists. Look at soy boys. Women don't like those guys. They don't. Even feminists that claim they like those guys end up accusing them of sexual harassment or even rape down the line because those guys are icky to them. I mean, because all guys are icky to them, but maybe not. I don't know. I bet like a Jason Momoa just grabbed them by the hair, they would fucking cream themselves. But that's just my thought anyway. But that's what I wanted to say about it. Go ahead, Prim.
No, like that completely makes sense. And it drives me nuts because they ignore that entire half of the equation. They ignore the fact that women, I mean, like, look at my example from earlier, right? The women mm-hmm. drinking from glasses that say male tears. It's like,
yep.
these people that are supposed to be so intersectional, that are supposed to be so against toxic masculinity, they're often the ones that are making these kinds of comments. They're using these kinds of terrible objects. They're the ones that are saying, oh yeah, cry more, men, when mm-hmm. when you can't see your children after a divorce. Like, cry more. Maybe you can learn something from being falsely accused of sexual assault. Like,
yep.
It just drives me nuts.
Absolutely. We got a super chat from Tyler Preston. Oh, we got one from Zaranx for $5. He says, it would be a very sinister idea if child labor laws were about leaving children in the care of women rather than them being exposed to men work. I already read that one, didn't I? I just gave you an extra super chat read. Okay, Tyler Preston gives us $5 and says, emotional maturity is the word not being used by these so-called scholars. Boys are taught to properly control their emotions more than girls. Well, because when boys voice their concerns, the older they get, the less we are likely to respond to it. Even parents basically say, well, you should toughen up. And I think that actually is better for them in ways. When girls cry, we tend to respond right away and try to help them. It's the way, and so we kind of make them that way. It's unfortunate, but it's true. If I had a girl, I'd probably try to toughen her up. I think that guys would appreciate that. Okay, so I want to get into this next bit. This is the at least, and then maybe we can like stop here and continue to talk about this in the after show. But I think this is crucial. Okay, so there's a section in here called multiple masculinities, and this is when we bring in the intersectionality stuff, because for some reason that's what we have to do. So they talk about the suicide rate. Okay, though men report less depression than women, they complete suicide at a far higher rate than women, and the numbers are moving in the wrong direction. The suicide rate for non-Hispanic American Indian and Alaska Native men jumped 38% between 1999 and 2014, according to the data for the Center of Disease Control and Prevention. For white men, because, you know, we have to, like, look at the races for some fucking reason, suicide rates increased by 28% in that time span. Suicide rates for women have been on the rise as well, but because men complete suicide more often than women, men's suicide death rates remain the highest. Because, wait, so does suicide only count as suicide? Does it not count if you don't die? Is it, like, still a suicide if you just, like, took a bunch of pills or... Yeah, right. But, I mean, like, they're counting it as though it's a suicide. So, basically, if a woman doesn't die and she's saved, or she cuts herself and she doesn't even do it right, like, she goes across the street instead of down the road, or if she, you know, takes a bunch of, you know, Flintstone vitamins or something, like, if she doesn't actually go through with it and it was just, like, a desperate plea for help, which often it is, they still count that. So they get to say women do it more somehow? Like, I don't know, that's bullshit.
Go ahead. So, I mean, so, like, the women who attempt every other weekend, then I guess they're just driving up the averages or something? I don't know.
Yeah, apparently if you don't die, it still counts as a suicide.
Yeah, I've never heard that before.
And then I wonder if they count it when men freak out and go on a killing spree and are killed while they're doing it. Because a lot of times, like, for example, Elliot Rodger, you know, he killed people, but then he died too. And that, does that count as a suicide? Or the other guy, the Parkland shooter, I think he was killed too. And I think that those people, the conditions under which put them in, on the path to that kind of like destruction was probably a way of them self-destructing and hurting people along the way. But it didn't, I don't think it comes from a different place than suicide does. I just think that when these mass shooters or mass murderers come out and they die in the process, they are trying to make a larger statement. They are not going to just die and disappear like most men who commit suicide that we don't hear about. So just wondering. Yeah. Some men could commit suicide without actually just like putting a bullet in their brain, but rather they just do it slowly over time by just abusing drugs until it kills them. Mm-hmm. You know, they just like stop giving a shit about their life. Like, I wouldn't be, you know what I'm saying? Like, so why, what do we, when we talk about suicide, how are we counting it? Because some people just self-destruct until they die. And then, and they don't, they just don't care. I think like Robin Williams may have done that. There was a few Hollywood actors that have basically like just had severe depression and they didn't kill themselves, but they just self-destructed, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Well, anyway, but here's the thing I really wanted to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
This vision of masculinity may summon up an image of a closed-mouthed cowboy, a la John Wayne. But there's more to masculinity than macho swagger. When the rules of manliness bump up against issues of race, class, and sexuality, they can further complicate men's lives. For example, the masculine requirement to remain stoic and provide for loved ones can interact with systemic racism and lead to so-called John Henryism for African-American men, a high-effort method of coping that involves striving hard in the face of prolonged stress and discrimination. Okay, so I never heard of John Henryism before. Have you ever heard of John Henryism? So I looked it up.
Not at all.
Yeah, so John Henry is a folk hero. They had a song written about him. He was kind of like Paul Bunyan, but the black version. And there's songs about him, and he's not a real person. But supposedly, you know, he was a guy who drove railroad spikes, and he was supposed to be better than, you know, a machine that was invented to do it, and he kind of killed himself to prove that he was better. And there was like a Disney cartoon about it. But
that's random.
So John Henryism, what this is, and you know, this is a, you guys got to hear this because this is fucking mind blowing. Okay, so when a black man is dealing with systemic racism, which I'm going to put in quotes because I think it's bullshit, and the way that he copes with it is by working hard and striving in the face of it. So basically like trying to overcome it. So basically being like a Larry Elder or like other black men that have basically like said, you know what? I don't care that this exists. I'm going to persist and I'm going to win anyway. That is John Henryism. That is toxic masculinity. Can you imagine? Do you see how stupid that is? Black men should not try, even though I don't, again, systemic racism is bullshit. Even though they're dealing with discrimination, they shouldn't actually fight to overcome it. What the fuck is that?
That's super messed up. Like, how is that not just telling them, oh yeah, you know, it's better to wallow. It's better to wallow in your situation and let it get to you, because that'll lead to increased mental health. Don't do anything to try and overcome your situation or work hard in the face of it, or, you know, try and cultivate a sense of positive internal strength in the face of, you know, external pressures. Don't do any of that. Just wallow in your self-pity. That'll be better. It's better than, you know, you trying to improve your own life.
I get the feeling, honestly, that this idea of John Henryism is a way of keeping black men, and by extension, well, keeping black men oppressed, because if they manage to get out of it and like make a life for themselves and build something, A, they'll be doing, you know, something that I guess black women aren't doing enough of for whatever reason, even though black women are more educated and score higher and graduate from college more often than black men, whatever. And also they don't get to cry discrimination anymore. Because imagine if black men everywhere just stopped, you know, fucking around, stopped killing each other, went to college, got educations, got jobs, started companies, and built the community. Well, there goes all of that activism. All of a sudden, that entire race-baiting industry can't make money anymore because all of a sudden the black men have realized that they have the ability to build shit. And they went out and did it. Literally what John Henry did. Built the railroad. like, and that is negative to them. I mean, doesn't that sound racist? Like, doesn't it? So,
well, I mean, I'm sure that they would try and argue with you that that's not what they're trying to do. But then, like, if you ask them, what are you trying to do in saying that it's a bad thing that these people work hard and persevere in the face of discrimination? Mm-hmm. Then I'm thinking they're probably not really going to have a great answer to that. Then they'll be like, you know, I'd have to go and sit on that one for a little while. Or maybe they'll just call you a racist. I don't know.
Apparently. So... John Henryism has been linked with hypertension and depression. Race, ethnicity, and discrimination can also interact with immigration status. As of fiscal year 2017, 68% of unaccompanied minors who crossed the border were male. Most of these children arrived from Central America and Mexico, fleeing gang violence, an additional psychological stressor. So one other thing, black men made up 37% of the male state and federal prison population and were more than 10 times as likely to be incarcerated in state and federal prisons as white men. Hispanic men were also overrepresented, making up 22% of the prison population, despite making up only about 8% of the general U.S. population. So they're trying to claim that toxic masculinity affects men of color, but specifically black men and Hispanic men. Let's be real, because they do talk a little bit about Asian men and how toxic masculinity affects Asian men is that supposedly it's saying that Asian men are seen as less masculine. I don't know by the fuck who that is. Because the thing is, masculinity, interestingly enough, it's not just like being a fucking dude bro jock that can, like, you know, pound a beer. It's also about being like, you know, an engineer, a scientist, a master at chess, a gamer professionally, a writer, a poet, an actor, a musician, a chef. These are all areas that I'm just naming off the top of my head. Astronaut, fucking cop, soldier. These are all areas that men fucking dominate, okay? So I don't think that a super smart Asian guy is not masculine. That's a stupid idea. So
yeah. It's like they're just saying that in order to be masculine, you have to be this stereotypical, I don't know, George of the Jungle type.
Yeah.
And intelligent men who get ahead and are successful and are lawyers and bankers and whatever else, those people aren't super masculine. They're right.
Meanwhile, Japanese guys literally work themselves to death, but that's not masculine. They literally work themselves to death, but that's not masculine. So I want to talk about this prison thing really quick, and then we're going to go. So, all right, here's what I want to look at. This is a CNN thing that Don Lemon himself talked about. So you can't give me, like, this is a right-wing bias or anything like that, even though that's bullshit. Where he talks about, he basically mentions the percentage of children that are raised, or the percentage of single mothers, the percent of births that are considered non-marital, okay? And most of these will be single mothers raising their kids. And I want to know if there's a correlation, because I think that ultimately this is the problem, okay? So Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders are at the lowest at 17%. Whites, this is in the United States, by the way, 29%, so 30% of whites. That's a lot, but it gets worse. Hispanics are 53%. More than half are born out of wedlock, which is highly likely to be the case that they are raised by a single mom. In American Indian and Native Alaskans, it's 66% of women that are single mothers. Okay, children born out of wedlock. And in blacks, it's 73%, like three quarters. I think it's actually, there was a more recent study where that number is higher. I think it was like 77%. Oh my gosh. So if you have that many black boys that are growing up without fathers, and it doesn't even have to be as high as that, because again, I know that there are cases in which there are the children born out of wedlock, but the father's in the home or he's in their lives. But that doesn't, I don't think that that's going to be a high percentage, right? Yeah, it's like closer to 80%, I think. But if you have that many boys that don't have a father in their life, you're going to have problems. That is why there are gangs. That is why there tends to be more violence, because there's no toxic masculinity informing their decisions. Because again, the suppression of feelings, the stoicism, this would help prevent gang violence, because they'd be less likely to hold beefs. They'd be less likely to react emotionally with violence. This is stuff that men teach, fathers teach their kids. This is something that they teach them. And a mom can do it, but you're giving her twice as much work. And maybe she's not good at all of that. Maybe that's why we need a father. And if you look at the number, and so like black criminality comes from one place. It's single motherhood. That has got to be the cause. It's the only thing there is. If you like eliminate that, then you'll change everything. Look at who's the lowest is Asians. How many Asian gangbangers do you know?
I mean, I don't know any gangbangers personally, but
yeah.
But yeah, like all joking aside, it's like there was that one quote. It's like, it's not a toxic masculinity problem. It seems to be a lack of masculinity problem. Like it's a toxic lack of masculinity in raising these children.
Absolutely.
Like it's children need to have these healthy male roles in order to properly be able to foster these abilities a lot of the time. Like it's like you said, it's not impossible for a single mother to do it alone, but it's a lot more difficult. And maybe if we stopped incentivizing the pushing out of fathers from children's lives, maybe this would be a lot less likely to happen.
Yeah. So I want... somebody mentioned Yakuza and triads. Well, I mean, in countries where they have like a almost, what, 99%, Japanese population or Chinese population. Yeah, you're going to get gangs. But I think that in the West, where there's, often a really like structured family unit, I think that that's very, very low by comparison. So. Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna give you any last words you want to say before we go into the after show, because we were past the time. So
yeah, that's true. All right. Well, I mean, like basically, just my overall thoughts on the matter are just this document. It basically says nothing of value. It's trying to take the feminist view of men and patriarchy and this very negative view of men and masculinity, and then it's trying to force it forward and say, look, here's our new guideline how to treat men. Just do it like this and that'll be bound to happen. Mm-hmm. Just basically try and treat men like women. That's the best way forward, because we don't like any of these male traits, except I guess when they benefit us. But It's terrible. The thought that this could become the new way forward in psychology is terrifying. I hope that it doesn't. I hope that people stand up and challenge this. I know I'm sure as shit going to stand up and try and challenge it wherever possible. But, we need more than just one person. There's got to be lots of people doing this.
Yeah, we need all hands on deck, really. Like, this has got to be pushed back on. This is bullshit. And here's the thing. Like, if this goes through, has become, like, the new standard, they're literally going to be creating more toxic masculinity, like, real toxic masculinity, which is, in many ways, essentially applying feminine standards to male behavior. And you're going to get destroyed. And by the way, this doesn't just hurt men. This hurts girls, too. You know, this is how you get rampant teen pregnancy. This is how you get, actually, in many ways, in the black community, you end up getting a lot of instances of inbreeding. Accidental, not on purpose, but accidental inbreeding happens a lot, because girls are because they can have sex with whoever they want, and in a black community, like a neighborhood or whatever, there's only a few guys that are fuckable, and all the women are fucking these guys, but they're not marrying them, they're not committing to them, these men aren't committing to them, so they end up, like, you know, one woman could have children from different fathers. And those men could father several children from many different women. And when those children grow up and they live in the same neighborhood and they meet each other and they don't know who the daddy is, they could end up fucking their sisters and brothers, like half sisters and half brothers or whatever you want to call it. So that happens. That happens. And it is a problem. Accidental inbreeding. But anyway, we got to go into the after show. We're going to be talking about the remainder of the article, which talks about how to change the culture, which talks about, of course, because we got to bring in trans issues and LGBTQ issues and stuff, because that's actually part of the conversation around masculinity. By the way, the one about women doesn't talk about that. It's not about that. The man stuff is all about how can we serve other people. So we're going to go ahead and go into the after show. I will leave you guys with this thought. This is something that I've been saying a few times. And I think this applies here. When women suffer, we try to change the universe around them to make them more comfortable. When men suffer, we try to change men to fit the universe that we have built around women. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and go. If you guys could give this video a like, also leave a comment. Let us know what you think about the article and also our thoughts on it. And be sure to subscribe to the channel if you aren't already. We'll see you guys in the after show. FeedTheBadger.com to join up and become a Badger yourself. I'll talk to you guys later. Thank you, Prim, for coming.
Oh, of course. Thank you for having me.